点儿。
Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, the Senate's moving closer to that high-stakes vote on President Trump's sweeping economic bill, extending massive tax cuts while slashing key safety net programs. Governor Kathy Hochul is speaking out, warning of the impact on upstate New York. North Country Public Radio's Emily Russell will have the story. As July 4th approaches, the Red Cross says the need for blood donations is urgent, especially for type O. John Vail from the Red Cross joins us to talk about a new Hudson Valley initiative, how to give the gift of life this summer, and how to stay safe this holiday weekend. Plus, river safety, local economic perspective with James B. Huntington, and free theater in Delaware County, the Franklin Stage Company kicking off their summer season. That's all coming up right after the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. The Senate is debating a tax bill that's a cornerstone of President Trump's second-term agenda. The legislation phases out tax credits for clean energy. And NPR's Michael Copley reports the bill threatens to add a new tax on renewable energy projects.
Clean energy advocates were stunned over the weekend when Republicans proposed a new tax on wind and solar plants that go online after 2027. To avoid the tax, companies would have to prove they've separated their supply chains from China, which would be hard to do given China's dominance of global supply chains. Analysts at the Rhodium Group estimate the tax would add up to 20% to the cost of wind and solar projects. Those taxes, along with the elimination of industry incentives, would cut how many wind and solar plants are built, Rhodium says, and likely raise electricity costs on consumers. Michael Copley, NPR News.
North Carolina Republican Senator Tom Tillis has announced he is not running for re-election next year. As NPR's Deirdre Walsh reports, this comes a day after President Trump threatened to back a primary challenger against Tillis next year.
Tillis was one of the two Senate Republicans who voted against moving forward with the massive tax and spending bill late Saturday evening. The president lashed out against him on social media, saying he was making a, quote, big mistake. In a statement, Tillis said too many elected officials are motivated by raw politics and, quote, don't give a damn about the people they promise to represent. Democrats are hoping to recruit former North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper to run. The 2026 race is expected to be one of the most competitive in the country. Deirdre Walsh, NPR News, the Capitol.
Stocks opened higher this morning after Canada dropped plans for a digital services tax that would have targeted U.S. tech companies. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average jumped about 150 points in early trading.
Canada's digital services tax was set to take effect today, costing U.S. companies such as Google and Amazon. But Canada ditched the tax after President Trump cut off trade talks and threatened to impose higher tariffs on Canadian imports. Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney says the neighboring countries have agreed to resume negotiations. The U.S. is also threatening higher taxes on goods from other trading partners as early as next week, although the administration's offered mixed signals on whether that deadline might be pushed back. Home Depot is buying a distributor of commercial building products such as drywall and steel framing. The acquisition of the GMS Corporation is valued at about $5.5 billion, including debt. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Authorities in northern Idaho say two firefighters are dead after they were shot while responding to a wildfire. Officials say they believe a gunman set the brush fire yesterday, then shot the firefighters as they were working on the blaze. A third firefighter was wounded. Idaho authorities say they found a man near the fire using a signal from a cell phone. That man was deceased. They also say they found a gun nearby. It's NPR. New York City police are investigating a shooting last night that wounded two people. They were nearby the historic Stonewall Inn. It's a landmark site of LGBTQ rights. New York City's mayor says the shooting happened just as Pride celebrations were finishing for the weekend. One person is in critical condition, another is in stable condition. No one has been identified as a suspect. People across the U.S. and around the world celebrated LGBTQ Pride over the weekend with parades and other festivities. As NPR's Mandalay Del Barco reports, political protests were also visible.
The theme at this year's New York City Pride Parade was Rise Up, Pride and Protest.
Many at the country's largest such event demonstrated against President Trump's recent executive orders and policies that limit rights for trans people and dismantle DEI programs. Parade-goers held up signs like one that read, "Our joy is our resistance." This year, some corporations cut back or canceled their sponsorships, but there were still major pride parades in San Francisco, Chicago, and other U.S. cities, and around the world. In Budapest on Saturday, 100,000 people marched in defiance of police orders and a ban by the Hungarian government. Among them was activist and journalist Adam Kanetskar, who talked to the Associated Press.
"We don't really care about the consequences. We are here because we are proud."
Mandalit Del Barco, NPR News.
Weather forecasters have posted heat cautions in Arizona, California, and the Pacific Northwest today. Residents could see triple-digit temperatures. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. RWJF is a national philanthropy working toward a future where health is no longer a privilege, but a right. Learn more at rwjf.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. As you just heard from NPR News, the Senate has begun that marathon voting session on the sweeping GOP policy bill, legislation that could define President Trump's first-year agenda. After a weekend of heated partisan debate, Senate Republicans aim to push the measure through and send it to the House. At stake, nearly $4 trillion in extended tax cuts from 2017, funded in part by deep cuts to key social safety net programs. In New York, Governor Kathy Hochul sounded the alarm Friday, warning that the bill, dubbed by Trump as his, quote, big beautiful bill, would devastate programs like Medicaid and food assistance across upstate communities while ballooning the national debt by more than $3 trillion. From the New York Public News Network, North Country Public Radio's Emily Russell reports.
Hundreds of people packed inside the Harrietstown Town Hall on Friday afternoon. An MC introduced about a dozen of the area's movers and shakers, from leaders of local nonprofits to business CEOs and top political donors.
"And now, ladies and gentlemen, please stand and welcome the 57th governor of the great state of New York, Governor Kathy Hochul."
Hochul stood at the podium between two big poster boards. One highlighted the impacts of Canadian tariffs on the region. The other listed potential impacts of Trump's proposed budget cuts. The North Country voted heavily in favor of Trump. This is a pretty solidly red district. But Saranac Lake leans left. Among a more sympathetic crowd on Friday, the Democratic governor struck a serious tone.
"Because right now, because of decisions being made in Washington as we speak, that this area is under siege."
Just minutes before Friday's event in Saranac Lake, news broke that Trump had suspended all trade talks with Canada. That's after Canada introduced a retaliatory tax on U.S. tech companies. The trade war began this spring after Trump imposed steep tariffs on Canadian goods and suggested the country become the 51st state. The president's policies and rhetoric have had a ripple effect throughout the North Country. Border crossings from Canada are down by 20 to 30%. Hochul said Friday that businesses are feeling the pain.
The Malone Golf Club alone, they said they've lost $400,000 in Canadian tourism dollars that they used to count on. "I don't know how you pay the bills. I don't know how you pay your staff, how you keep the lights on."
Another focus of Friday's event was Trump's immigration policies. He's pushed for ICE agents to arrest 3,000 people per day. Some of those arrests are happening here on North Country Farms. Michael Murphy, manager of Childstock Farms in Franklin County, spoke at Friday's event about the impact of Trump's immigration tactics.
"One day mass deportations are promised. The next day there's a talk of exemptions for farm workers. And then it's back to raids and removals. This uncertainty creates fear and instability in the workforce we all depend on. Immigrant workers are the backbone of New York's agricultural economy. They are highly..."
The North Country's healthcare sector is also facing fear and uncertainty. Trump's so-called Big Beautiful Bill would cut Medicaid by nearly $800 million. About 30% of people in the North Country are enrolled in the healthcare program. Dr. Bill Borges is a family physician and chief medical officer of Hudson Headwaters Health Network, which specifically serves lower-income areas in the North Country.
Medicaid cuts, as currently proposed, will impact us directly, very much in the negative, on the order of millions of dollars. By our estimates, we anticipate losing roughly $2.3 million as an organization with those cuts alone.
Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, who represents this area, said she was proud to vote for the so-called Big Beautiful Bill. She said changes to Medicaid would, quote, strengthen and secure the program. Trump's budget would also cut funding for SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Nicole Loren is the CEO of the Joint Council for Economic Opportunity, a food pantry that serves Franklin and Clinton counties. Loren told the crowd on Friday that the number of people JCEO has helped tripled in the last 3 years.
If funding for these critical programs is reduced or even eliminated, people in our community, so these could be your friends, your neighbors, your coworkers, even your family, will face dire consequences.
After a handful of speakers highlighted the impacts of possible funding cuts, Governor Hochul returned to the front of the room. She called on the crowd to push back on the president's proposed budget cuts and urged them to reach out to Stefanik.
You have an influential member of Congress who can do the right thing tomorrow, right? We can allow, listen, I'm going to give everybody, I have hope.
The Senate is currently debating provisions of the bill and could then send those changes back to the House of Representatives for another vote. Friday's event came the same day that The Hill, a national newspaper, cited two sources who said Stefanik is preparing to officially announce her run for governor. I asked Hochul about this after Friday's event.
Any Republican who runs, we don't know who that's going to be, will have to do a lot of explaining on why they were the enablers. They were the enablers to Donald Trump's policies when they had the power to stop it. Everything we're
Trump
talking
made
about
real
today.
Gains in New York in last year's election, getting 44% of the vote compared to 36% in his first election. It was a far closer race for Hochul, who beat her Republican challenger by just 6%. The latest polling shows that Stefanik or another Republican could close that gap even more. In Saranac Lake, I'm Emily Russell for the New York Public News Network.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, the need for blood doesn't take a holiday. This Independence Day, a simple act could save a life. John Vail of the American Red Cross joins us next to explain why summer is a challenging time for donations and how local banks and credit unions are joining in the effort to save lives. That's next. This is Radio Chatska.
I'm Maria Hinojosa, this week on Latino USA. Women who wake up at 3 a.m. to make lonche for their husbands, are they MAGA coded like the larger so-called tradwife movement? Latina tradwives, MAGA or not? That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. As June closes out today and Independence Day approaches, the American Red Cross is urging everyone to give blood. The need is critical, particularly for type O blood, which doctors rely on in emergencies. The Hudson Valley chapter of the Red Cross has launched a new initiative called Banking on Life, teaming up with local financial institutions to strengthen the region's blood supply. John Vail is the Hudson Valley Executive Director of the American Red Cross. He joins us now to talk about that effort, the ongoing need for donors, and we'll get some safety tips for the holiday weekend as well. John, good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, as summer's kicking into high gear, we're approaching 4th of July, Friday. Why is now such a critical time to donate blood?
So yeah, Tim, the weeks around Independence Day are typically our most challenging days of the year when maintaining a strong blood supply. And if you're aware, they actually do fall within the 100 deadly days of summer. It's a name commonly used by the medical community, and it refers to that period between Memorial Day and Labor Day. So during these months, our regular donors, you know, they are hopefully out there enjoying the nice summer weather we're having here in the Hudson Valley and busy with travel, on vacation, schools are out of session. Fewer businesses are also unable to host blood drives, with many of the employees being out of the office. And at that same time, you have all this increased activity, whether it's from, you know, road trips or boating or campfires or all that fun outdoor activity, it actually can lead to an increase in traumatic injuries. So that all of that together really just increases that need for blood. And that's what we're seeing here in the Hudson Valley and across the country.
Yeah, more people out and about, not necessarily thinking about it, but then, as you said, could lead to more accidents, injuries. Let's talk about type O blood, which we mentioned is in especially high demand. What makes type O blood so important during emergencies?
So every 2 seconds, someone in the United States needs a blood transfusion. And so all blood types are needed. But as you mentioned, that type O is really special. Because it allows doctors, you know, in an emergency situation, maybe where we can't, you know, identify the blood type, that O, you know, is reached for. So type O negative is, of course, the universal type. And then our O positive can be safely transfused to approximately 80% of the population. So as you mentioned, individuals of all types, please, you know, get out there. And if you haven't donated before, it's a very simple process to get out there and donate. And you'll see our amazing volunteers and our fantastic blood collection staff. You know, they'll greet you with a smile and make sure that, you know, you can donate safely if you make that appointment here this summer.
And during this time in the summer where you're trying to get more folks to donate, the Hudson Valley chapter of the Red Cross has this unique inventive campaign, Banking on Life. Tell us about the community partners involved and how these local institutions are helping.
Yeah, so, you know, unfortunately, we kind of knew this time was coming, right? You know, during the summer, it's very common for us. So our chapter, you know, several months ago started planning this initiative. And as you mentioned, Banking on Life. We're teaming up with several of our area banks here and through our board of directors with the M&T Bank, Ulster Savings Bank, Hudson Valley Credit Union, and Mid-Hudson Valley Federal Credit Union are all, you know, teaming up here this summer to make sure that we can collect blood. So we're going to be hosting 4 drives throughout the month. So the first drive will kick off tomorrow on July 1st. And then for the next several weeks, we'll be hosting blood drives. And these really will allow us to collect that blood. As we mentioned, that type O is needed. However, all types will allow us to make sure that when the time comes, that blood will be available for those who need it most.
And beyond blood donations, the Red Cross also promoting safety around the 4th of July holiday. Can you share some top safety reminders for people planning to use fireworks or head to the beach?
Sure. Yeah, I, you know, as a lifelong Hudson Valley resident, you know, I just love this area. So the increased activity that we spend outdoors in the summer, you know, just, you know, there are a lot of tips out there, and I don't think we have time to go through them all here, yeah. Here, Tim. So if you're interested, please go to redcross.org/summer-safety. You can also download, we have several apps. So if you, you know, go onto your app store or the Google Play store, again, you can download these apps for free. There's a first aid app, you know, a weather app, you know, so you can, you know, keep an eye on those thunderstorms that roll through. I also encourage you, if you haven't taken a first aid class as well, and you're going to be out there this summer, might be a good time to enroll in a Red Cross first aid, CPR, AED course. You can learn how to control bleeding, treat bee stings, insect bites, and all those other skills that you might need, you know, and depending on what you're doing this summer.
Well, especially during the summer months. So as you mentioned, more folks out and about, more folks doing those kinds of activities. And you mentioned the website, redcross.org. Is that where folks can also learn about the Hudson Valley Banking for Life campaign as well?
So, yeah, our Banking for Life campaign, just like all of our blood drives, actually the best way to look for your nearest blood drive would be to, again, download the blood app. You can go onto our website, redcross.org, or you can call 1-800-RED-CROSS and just select the prompt for blood. Again, all of these will allow you to kind of use, whether you're looking for a specific blood drive, you can type in that zip code, or if you're looking one closest to where you are, again, that will allow you to find that drive. So whether it's, you know, our Banking on Life drives, if you're out there and able to support them, that's incredible. However, every drive this summer is going to count. So if you make an appointment, one thing we just stress, you know, we know things, emergencies arise, but please try to keep those appointments as best you can. You know, that way we can make sure we collect that blood and get it to where it's needed most.
Is there a message you'd like to leave listeners with as they head into their 4th of July celebrations?
I just hope everyone's able to enjoy a safe and lovely holiday here. Again, we're all part of this community. So again, I thank all of those who've donated or helped support our mission here in the Hudson Valley, and to our volunteers who, of course, carry out 90% of our work here. So that was to say thank you, and thanks for having me on, Tim.
John Vail, Hudson Valley Executive Director of the Red Cross. John, thanks for joining us, and have a happy and safe 4th of July.
You as well. Thank you.
Now let's move on to river safety on the Upper Delaware River, especially. Last week we saw those dangerously hot and humid conditions across the region. Heat indexes reaching as high as 110 degrees in some parts. Kimberly Izar joined the National Canoe Safety Patrol on Farm and Country recently. Their mission is to promote water safety and responsible paddling on the Upper Delaware River. To learn how they're making, she learns how they're making sure folks stay safe and have fun this summer.
All right, so you just follow me down to Narrowsburg, okay?
Sounds good.
Sorry, it's kind of rushed.
No, that's fine. I'll see you there.
On most Saturday mornings, Tom Candela and a group of volunteers are typically outside the Zane Grey Museum in Lackawaxen, Pennsylvania, taking the time to get the weather report and details on how high the Delaware River will get for the day.
You're going to turn left at the stop sign.
At the stop sign, okay.
But this Saturday, he and the National Canoe Safety Patrol team received some news that they want to act fast on.
Okay, so where are we heading?
Okay, so today, National Canoe Safety Patrol met this morning with the Park Service, National Park Service, and they informed us that there is a big group going out of the livery just above Skinner's Falls. We're going to turn left at the light. At the livery just above Skinner's Falls, I believe it's Landers. I'm not sure if it's Landers or Kittatinny. I forget which one. And they're putting in a group of Boy Scouts. Allegedly, there are 200 Boy Scouts. Wow. And a possibility of 100 boats. So that's two men per canoe.
Oh my goodness.
If they're in canoes, they are at a higher risk of tipping over going through Skinner's Falls.
Candela is a member of the National Canoe Safety Patrol, a group committed to keeping river users safe in and out of the water and out of trouble.
What kind of trouble? They could tip over and actually become a swimmer. They can get lodged, their boat can get lodged on a rock where they're stuck between a raging river, if you will, and a big stone, a boulder, and they need help getting off that rock. Or they could lose gear, or they could whatever, you know. Basically, though, what we're anticipating in a canoe, as opposed to a raft, rafts are usually a lot more safer going down the rapids, particularly if, you know, you don't have paddlers or good paddlers. So we're anticipating people going into the water. And our role would be to pull them out and make sure that they're safe.
Skinner's Falls is a popular spot on the Delaware River for rafting, swimming, and tubing that borders Pennsylvania and New York. Candela and I drive down to the entrance of the falls parking lot just off Route 97 in Narrowsburg, New York. Today's canoe patrol team is about 5 members, but Candela says it can grow to as many as 20, especially on busier weekends like 4th of July, when people often forget to take simple measures like wearing a life jacket to prevent accidents. More than 150 people drown in New York State each year. Drowning is the 4th leading cause of death among children ages 1 to 4 and the 7th leading cause for children ages 5 to 14 in New York State, according to state health data. Candela says the patrol is in constant contact with other organizations to prevent anyone from drowning.
We have radios that connect. Not only, we have two different radios, one that connects with each other and another radio that connects directly with the National Park Service.
Gotcha.
So if somebody needed to be medevaced out or needed additional assistance in some way, shape, or form, we can contact the National Park Service and say, hey, we need help down here. And they would send a boat out and a crew out to evacuate that person if necessary.
Before folks get in the water, patrol members make sure that they're wearing appropriate clothing.
A lot of people are wearing cotton.
Right.
Cotton basically absorbs the water,
right,
and it doesn't allow it to evaporate quickly, whereas a polyester does.
Yeah.
And so basically people in a cotton t-shirt, whatever they're wearing, pants, it soaks and they're soaked in it. And then they just get colder and colder and start to shiver, and that's when hypothermia can set in. Someone has hypothermia, believe it or not, a simple thing like a black garbage bag, you know, the big lawn bags, we cut holes in them for the head and the arms, and you just slip it over somebody, and that helps keep their heat in, and it helps warm them up. So we do things like that. We're prepared for stuff like that.
Down at Skinner's Falls, large boulders protrude from the waters. The rapids cascade down the river as patrol members disperse around the areas where accidents are most common and to direct people where to go. Rafts filled with children and adults row down the river and through the rapids. Near the bottom of the falls, patrol volunteer Joel Duffy is stationed in his kayak, wearing a bright yellow jacket and a white helmet with several water bags filled with rescue equipment, like long ropes and heavy-duty buckles. Duffy's been volunteering with the National Canoe Safety Patrol since 1993 and says this morning's groups are well prepared.
See how the kid on the front of that boat got a face full of water?
Yeah.
That's one of the things we're looking out for is hypothermia. But these guys are pretty well prepared.
Yeah.
Everybody's wearing their life jackets. We saw them loading up with gear.
Duffy says that he and his team instruct people through the more dangerous stretches of the Delaware River.
Now we got canoes. Now is when things could get interesting.
Okay.
If they stay on the Pennsylvania side, they'll probably get through without any issue. If they come over to this side, you see that big drop right over there that
yeah.
I was paddling into? They can get themselves into trouble over there.
Longtime volunteer Donna Ford said that over the years, river rafting companies have tightened up their safety measures.
The liveries are doing a much better job now at getting their clients to wear their PFDs, keep them buckled and on. And the Park Service has also had a large impact on that. Years ago, it was hard to find people wearing them at all.
Wow.
So, yeah. You know, safety has been a concern for the past 40 years yeah. in this area. When you hit 70 degree water, it's shocking. And it takes your breath away. And that's probably the most common issue that we hear from people.
Joel Duffy says that as a volunteer, the community of fellow safety patrollers is invaluable. He and his wife have been doing patrols since she was pregnant. Decades later, his son now joins him on patrols. Donna Ford agrees, adding that even the memories built with the people she rescues are unforgettable. She remembers rescuing a father and son whose canoe flipped over on cold waters one Father's Day weekend.
We had to call the Park Service in to evacuate them, but we warmed them on the beach just by getting as much of their wet clothes off as we could, putting them in a garbage bag to keep the wind off of them. And they called us after their trip to the hospital thanking us for just being here. And you think of those times that if nobody were here, what would have happened to them?
But Ford says that the risks shouldn't deter adventure seekers from getting in the water. With the right safety precautions, the experience can be unforgettable.
It's thrilling, it's exciting, it's nature, and it proves something to yourself, right? If you're looking for a confidence builder, come out here. You know, the more times you make it through, the more exciting it becomes.
In Narrowsburg, I'm Kimberly Izar for Radio Catskill.
And a reminder, when on the Upper Delaware River, the river can be deceptive and dangerous. On average, there are 2 drowning incidents each year on the Upper Delaware River. That's according to the National Park Service. Do not overestimate your swimming abilities. Experienced and strong swimmers have drowned in the river in the past. And those in a boat are strongly recommended to wear a life jacket. Wearing a life jacket and wearing it correctly is the safest thing you can do while on or in the river. And river conditions can change very quickly. Stay informed by calling the river hotline 845-252-7100 for daily information about river height, air and water temperatures, boating conditions, and general river safety. The hotline 845-252-7100 is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, through October 31st. And there's more information and more river rules at nps.gov. We'll take a break, and when we come back, local economic perspective from our own James B. Huntington. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFRadio.org.
A group called the Zizians has been linked to a string of deaths across the U.S., and it has roots in Silicon Valley AI research.
The inevitability or likelihood of a coming superintelligence and the need to ensure that this superintelligence is aligned with human values and morality.
I'm Deborah Becker. Who are the Zizians? That's on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and Monday, that means it's time to hear from James B. Huntington for Local Economic Perspective. James B., good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
Well, let's jump into the Fed's preferred inflation gauge. I'm glad you're here because I don't know what the core PCE is. what does this tell us about some underlying inflation pressures and how it might influence future Federal Reserve policy? What happened with that?
Yes, it is the Personal Consumption Expenditures Index. We have the core version, which removes food and energy costs. That went up 0.2% in May, which works out to 2.7% actually over the past year. The regular, the one that does not include, that does include food and energy, was up 2.3%. So they're still relatively low, but they are going up somewhat. They're not showing a great deal of impact from tariffs. Most of them have not taken effect, or they're not totally through. Personal spending fell 0.3%. which was down from an increase in April for 0.1%. We're talking about May here. So we've had the effect of four straight months with no interest rate changes. That may change, but for now, it looks like we are in a steady state.
And how about the overall U.S. economy? How much did it shrink or grow in the first quarter?
Well, it shrank 0.5% at an annual rate. So that's disappointing. We don't like to see that. They're saying the real reasons for that are imports went up substantially. A lot of companies were trying to beat the oncoming tariffs, and so a lot more things were imported. They went up 38% in the first quarter. That's a lot. So that is one thing. We had increases in investment and consumer spending, which somewhat offset that. But consumer spending did go up 0.5% in the first quarter. So it's mainly the imports that cause things to shrink, but we don't know what it will do, what the further effects will be. It may be, strangely enough, that when tariffs go into effect, the total amount of the U.S. economy is going to increase because more things are going to be made domestically.
So that's the hope there. And with the economy shrinking a bit, the Fed's preferred inflation rate there increasing slightly above forecasts. What does this tell us about the decisions that the Fed might make in July? They're remaining cautious as they have been. But for people managing like mortgages, loans, investments, what's a financial strategy that they should look to in this environment?
Well, I'm seeing a rundown on different ways of spending large amounts of money, and auto rates for new and used cars have been trending higher. They're going up. They're now an average rate of 7.3% in May for new car loans and about 11% rather for used car loans typically. Credit card rates are almost unchanged at just over 20% for the average rate there. A lot of these things, most of these things are indicating we should look for alternatives, comparison shop, because there are different places that have different prices, especially the smaller banks and credit unions may have some of the best. Mortgage rates right now, the average 30-year fixed is 6.84% as of June 2nd. That's really only 11 hundredths of a percent lower than what it was a year ago and virtually unchanged from the previous week. So we have the same thing there. Get multiple quotes and get them on the same day because they do change daily, just to have a peek. There are remarkable differences I've seen between one place and another for qualifying for a house loan. Then we have savings accounts and CDs, which are generally quite low. Savings accounts are absolutely low at regular commercial banks, but you can find online ones and credit unions paying more, paying 4% or more, depending on the savings accounts. Also, consider CDs. It's a good time to consider CDs because the rates can be a lot higher if you're willing to commit to not getting to your money for 6 or 12 months or so. You can often do a lot better. Student loans, they're expecting those to drop a little bit anyway, down to something below the current, or 6.53% down to 6.39%, a warning that we have here that a lot of banks and credit unions don't want to write student loans at all. So you may have to shoot or shop around considerably more and find something here. So, yeah, the whole idea is looking around more. Nothing is really terrible. Nothing is really great with these rates, but try multiple sources.
Let's talk about tariffs some more, about the impact that they're having on tech job openings, and then also AI is having an effect on those openings. What's going on there?
Yes, both of them. We're seeing an interesting change, a discouraging change if you're in that field, that IT positions have been doing a lot worse than anything else, especially for new college graduates. The age 22 to 27, we have the unemployment rate for them jumping up from 3.9 to 5.8% over the 3 years ending in March. Then we have the jobless rate for all workers only has gone up from 3.7 to 4%. So generally, there's just less available. The IT, or the AI situation, is causing damage, considerable damage to the amount of jobs available on the low end, because they're working with AI or expecting that it will cover a lot of things that low-level, entry-level workers can do. So since 2022, we've had IT employment down for 22 to 27-year-olds 8%, but there's actually a small raise, an increase for college graduates who are older than 27. So it's hurting people on the below. It's going to depend a lot in terms of what your specialty is, what you are trained and looking for, what you can get. The basic programming sorts of thing is looking especially bad because AI is able to do a lot more of that now, and it's actually working. So there are some real questions if you are starting college, whether you want to get into this field, if you're very well suited to it and have been planning for it and you think that this is the kind of thing for you, then you might continue, but I wouldn't suggest getting into this field if you're really after the money, after higher job opportunities, because they're not materializing.
Well, let's talk about the numbers. We've got time to talk about what's going on with all the different futures and oil and Bitcoin. What's going on with the numbers and how do things change?
As of early this morning, gold was $32.85 over the past week. That means it's down 80, down generally on, as we will see, the stock market strength. Money has gone from gold into stocks of different kinds. Silver, $36.04. That's down 6 cents. The ratio is 91 to 1, the ratio is dropping. It's getting back to last year's normal, really, in the first couple of months of this year. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 43,819. That's up over 1,600, especially strong on the Israel and Iran ceasefire and on Trump's relative quietness as far as new tariffs, moving his emphasis from one thing to another. The NASDAQ, 20,273, up 826, a similar percentage, a little bit higher. Much the same reasons apply there. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, 65.36, down over $8, especially strong on possibilities that were around, which seem decreased now for an oil shock and problems with the supply getting around. Bitcoin, 107,627, up about 6,000. It bounced back and a little more from what it went down last week. British pound, 1.3696. That's up 3 cents. So we have the dollar going down in general. The euro did almost exactly the same, 1.1723, up 2.66 cents. So the dollar is looking weaker for these things. And Japanese 100 yen went up a penny to 69 cents, or still in its range it's been hanging out in. So overall, we erased a lot of negative changes and some positive changes from last week. It's a rise from 2 weeks ago, so generally, investors are happy. Will that last? Don't count on it. We'll see what it's doing next week.
Absolutely. James B. Huntington keeping an eye on it for us. And thank you, sir, for doing that. And we hope you have a great 4th of July. And we'll see you next week to see, do things stay hopeful or not. Thanks.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners. Use your mind.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, Free Theater returns to Delaware County this 4th of July. Franklin Stage Company is kicking off its summer season, and culture reporter Valerie Manzi is talking with Executive Artistic Director Patricia Buckley about what makes their stage so special. That's coming up right after this break. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Jesse King. On this week's 51%, we speak with the president of Planned Parenthood about how the big, beautiful bill in Congress could impact the organization's clinics. We also debunk some menopause myths and speak with the hosts of a new NPR podcast highlighting how women have helped each other access abortion despite restrictions. This week on 51%.
Monday night at 8 on Radio Catskill.
This is Ari Shapiro with NPR. If you've been thinking about helping this station with a contribution, but now is not the right time for a financial gift, you can donate a vehicle you don't need. Pickup is free, and it could be worth hundreds of dollars in support. Think about it, and thanks.
We accept any vehicle, running or not, including cars, trucks, boats, RVs, motorcycles, and more. Donate at WJFFradio.org.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll hear the new exotic sounds of Skip Heller and the Voodoo Five, the Royal Samoans, and a Mambo in 3D by Tito Puente. I'm Darryl Brogdon. Join me where the music's shaken, not stirred, the Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Dedicated to building community through the arts, Franklin Stage Company in Delaware County opens its doors July 4th for another season of live performance. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi sat down with Executive Artistic Director Patricia Buckley, who's been with the company since 2005, to talk about their mission and what's in store for the summer.
Welcome to Radio Catskill, Patricia.
Thank you so much, Valerie. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, I'm happy to have you here because as a fan of the Franklin Stage Company, I'd like to share this information with our listeners because Franklin, New York is, well, from Liberty about an hour and 15 minutes away. It's a beautiful drive and it's a quiet little town of 375 people, but it does have a very famous resident as well.
Yes, it does.
Well, I'm going to leave the audience guessing on that. Let's begin with the building in which your theater company is housed, and that is Chapel Hall. Now, Chapel Hall was founded in 1836 as a preparatory school, and it was called the Delaware Literary Institute. That closed in 1906 when the school merged with the public school, and it went into the hands of the Masons until 1996, where the Franklin Stock Company, INC, comes in. So I'm going to let you take it from there.
Yes, okay, great. Well, yes, Chapel Hall was part of the Delaware Literary Institute. There were three buildings that formed kind of a, almost like a little prep school campus. And Chapel Hall was, as you can imagine, the chapel of the school. It was the chapel and the boys' dormitory. So the first floor was a chapel. And when the Masons took over, they turned that chapel into a little proscenium theater and they built wings and they took out the posts that were, you know, it's running throughout the middle of the room and they shored those up with trusses on the second floor. And thus, you know, the Masonic temple was born and there is an actual temple on the third floor of the building. And then in 1906, there were, you know, significant remodelings that needed to be done and improvements, and the membership of the Masons was kind of dwindling at that time. And so there were a few people in Franklin, Eugene and Carol Marner, and the mayor of the town, who was Tom Butts at that time, they had long wanted to start a theater. And people in the village were, you know, concerned about what's going to happen to that building. And the only party interested was a developer who kind of wanted to turn it into condos. And people were, you know, not happy about that. They wanted it to stay in the public sphere. So the Masons were kind enough to basically sell the building to the Marners and the Franklin Stage Company for a dollar. And the Franklin Stage Company was born 1996, 1997, and they immediately began doing some renovations to the building. Our lobby area and the little kitchenette and the bathrooms on the first floor were all renovated by the Franklin Stage Company or the Franklin. It was incorporated as the Franklin Stock Company at Chapel Hall, but we all call it the Franklin Stage Company now. And they had this dream of doing, you know, admission-free professional theater to make the arts accessible to everyone, regardless of their economic circumstance. And that's how the theater began. And it kind of continues the tradition of the Delaware Literary Institute, which was a co-ed school that trained ministers and missionaries. And so the Marners and Tom Butts felt like, you know, this is a continuation of that tradition of education and public service. And so the Franklin Stage Company has had our policy of free admission since its founding. And we pass the hat. If you've been to Franklin Stage, you know, we stand by the door with our hat in our hand every night. And we like to reinforce that sometimes people might be able to pay a little more one night, and maybe that covers a time in the future when they won't be able to pay more. They'll need to pay less. And that's kind of how we build community and how everybody takes care of each other. And we're very proud of our programming. We're a professional Actors Equity Theater. And we also bring in visiting artists who aren't part of the Equity Union, but they're professional companies, professional solo performers, dance companies, bands. And we do two of those shows and two plays throughout the summer season. We also are working on developing some new work, which we have been doing recently. We had our first world premiere in 2023. And we have another new show that we're doing a reading of in September. And the other part of our programming, so our mission is to both produce theater and to take care of the building. So we've done many, many renovations projects on the building. And last year we had the facade of the building painted and it looks just beautiful. And then our final bit of programming is our intern program, which we're really proud of. It's a production and technical theater internship. It's a paid internship, and every year we have 2 to 4 interns, and we often those young people often come back to us and work for us. The entire program is called the Interns and Young Professionals Program. And for instance, our stage manager this year started with us in 2023 as an intern, and last year she was the assistant stage manager. This year she's our full season stage manager. So that kind of encapsulates Franklin Stage a little bit, I think. And we have a fantastic season this summer. We have 4 shows. Like I said, we're beginning with a really wonderful comedy by David Lindsay Abaire called Kimberly Akimbo. And it's about a young woman who suffers from a disease that makes her age. So she's in high school, but she looks like she's in her 70s. And there's a lot of comedy and pathos to be mined from her struggles with her somewhat dysfunctional family and her disorder, and how she is navigating, high school with in the body she's in, with the family she's got, and she makes a connection with another kind of outsider at school, and it's a really beautiful story.
Now, that was a musical on Broadway, correct?
Yes, we are doing the original play that the music was made from.
Okay.
It's a 5-character comedy. And yes, in 2022, I believe, David Lindsay Abaire wrote the book for the musical, and Jean Tesori did the music, and it won the Tony in 2023.
Something wonderful to look forward to.
Yes, it's a great story. It's really funny. It's very poignant and very wacky at the same time. So,
well, we could use that.
Yes, exactly.
And after that, I believe, do you have the Magdalene?
Yes, we have Aaron Layton's solo show, Magdalene, which we brought to our theater in 2017, our first year as artistic, executive staff, and it was a big hit. That was almost 10 years ago.
Wow.
And I think the show is more relevant than ever, and I know that a lot of people that saw it at that time maybe will come back and see it, but there's also we also have a big part of our audience that did not see it, as we've been growing our audience since those days. So felt like it was a great time to bring it back. It's a story of the Magdalene Laundries in Ireland, which is where young unmarried women that got pregnant were sent to work and to have their babies. And they were often not allowed to keep their children. And the work was very hard. And the stories are they're very strong, but there's also a lot of humor in that play. And Aaron Layton is a masterful performer, and she plays a whole bunch of characters, and her work is beautiful. So we have that. And then the next weekend we have Bridgman Packer Dance, which is an amazing company. It's a husband and wife dance team who do a lot of work with projections and dancing and interacting with those projections. And It's really got a wonderful sense of humor and sense of humanity. It's very beautiful. And they are here with us August 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. And then the next weekend, we open our second play, which is Red. And that is a story about the artist and the painter, Mark Rothko, who was commissioned to make murals for the Four Seasons restaurant in New York when it was being designed by Philip Johnson. And he really was paid more than an artist would ever have thought possible in those days. But he's very conflicted about, you know, whether he should be doing his art for that amount of money and to be the background of people sitting in a restaurant. And that's kind of what the play is about. He and his assistant are having this ongoing conversation about the role of art and what an artist owes to himself and the world, and, you know, what makes an artist have integrity or lose integrity. And it's a really great piece.
Can you give us your website so folks can learn more about your organization and its history and, of course, your upcoming productions?
Yes. Our website is franklinstagecompany.org, all written out. And everything is there on the website, and you can make reservations. It's easy and free. It's just a click and a few questions, and then you are reserved for the shows. And it'll tell you also where we're located and directions on how to get there. And if you come to town, some places to eat or places to stay if you need to. That's all on our website. And also our schedule right into the fall when we're going to do a reading of a new play.
And your first production is when?
We open July 4th.
Okay. So it's a big celebration.
Yes. We're going to have a little party after the opening night show. And then we run that show through July 20th. That closes on the 20th.
Well, that all sounds like a wonderful season coming up, and look forward to interviewing you or the actors or directors about your other upcoming events.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you for all you do to bring these wonderful events to the community.
Thanks to cultural reporter Valerie Manzi for that report, speaking to the executive artistic director of the Franklin Stage Company in Delaware County. That's Patricia Buckley. That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Before we go, you've likely heard by now about the threats to our federal funding. As early as next month, we could find ourselves with a budget shortfall of nearly 25% of our annual income. These funds were previously approved by Congress, but now they're talking about clawing them back, and we've had little time to prepare for their loss. Reaching and exceeding our fundraising goals has never been more critical. You can donate now ahead of our summer fund drive, which officially begins on Monday, a week from today, to keep us sustained and going here at Radio Catskill. Donate at wjffradio.org or give us a call at 845-482-4141. Thank you for your support. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Dog Mountain Lodge, providing dog boarding and grooming, also boarding cats, birds, and other exotic pets. Located in Coshecton, New York, and on the web at dogmountainlodge.com. And from North American Cultural Laboratory, Highland Lake, New York, an experimental workspace for performing artists and inquisitive audiences, creating a space for community celebration throughout the year, NACL.org, and from listeners like you.
A group called the Zizians has been linked to a string of deaths across the U.S., and it has roots in Silicon Valley AI research.
The inevitability or likelihood of a coming superintelligence and the need to ensure that this superintelligence is aligned with human values and morality.
I'm Deborah Becker. Who are the Zizians? That's on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's forecast, it looks like humidity in times of clouds, sun mixed there with a high of 84. Humidity remains tonight and through tomorrow. Tonight, occasional rain and a thunderstorm possible later with a low of 69. We'll see some heavy thunderstorms in the region tomorrow, high 81. And then humidity breaks a bit. It's mostly sunny Wednesday and a high 81. On Point is next.
WJFF Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.